let's see. The righteous man wisely considereth the house of the wicked, but God overthroweth the wicked for their wickedness. Okay, the problem with that is it seems to take him forever to do it. From our perspective. Another thing, in Job 21, Job says that the wicked man seems to live long, has prosperous life, his children grow up without problems and things like that a lot of times. And a person has to understand these things. Under the Old Testament, if a man lived right, he could ask for the vengeance upon his enemies, and God would do it and be obligated to do it. In the New Testament, that's not the way it goes. In the New Testament. Okay, but the idea of wisely considering the house of the wicked. With Hollywood and the mass media, they always try to portray these wicked people as happy and joyful and all this stuff. And you know they're not, because they've been through 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 divorces. They're on dope. They're miserable people, and you know all that's not true. But then the Hollywood is just a bunch of byproduct idiots off the public education. If you go higher up, you know, with the political officials and things like that, and they're real cautious what they say when the tape's out and the camera's on. These people are wicked. And the Lord keeps account of everything. And so why does God kill somebody like Brother Roloff before his time and leave somebody like George Burns or around, you know, or Michael Jackson? You know, stuff like that. And the Lord's got his ways. And the thing is that George Burns, when he hits the judgment, he is burning. And Brother Roloff hits the judgment seat of Christ, he is going to highly be rewarded. And the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. And a lot of that goes with the judgments. Okay, 13. Whoso stoppeth his ears at the cry of the poor, he also shall cry himself, but shall not be heard. Okay, remember, doctrinally, Proverbs deals with the tribulation. And poor everywhere. Now, at the word cry, the letter L, runs you to several places, Deuteronomy 15, Psalms 41, and probably for us, 2 Corinthians 9, where we consider the poor. Now, Proverbs 29:7, you got to consider the cause of the poor. Why are they poor? Now, consider the cause of the poor. The word cause is what is often used in court, and it's like another spelling for the word case. Can you imagine how many of these judges are going to, when they hit the judgment? And they've lied, and they've lied, and they have just taken advantage of people in front of them. And these attorneys and stuff like that, some of the lowest lives on the earth. And that's why Isaiah 23, verse 9 says that he's going to hold the honorable in contempt. Isaiah 23:9. And that's kind of strange. But the idea of considering the poor, somebody's legitimately poor, they've had some troubles, they've gone through some heartaches. When you help them out, however you help them out, then that act is a righteous act that lives forever. Now, as far as the Bible goes, considering the poor or trying to help the poor, you'll notice it says, whoso stoppeth his ears at the cry of the poor. This is a local thing. I wouldn't give to any organization that's a national thing that's trying to help out the poor, because I don't know where it's going. Okay, now, probably one of the best legitimate places you can stick your money where you can't go and observe where it's going is Brother Mike Roberts helping the orphans over there in Vietnam. I've been there and seen what he does with it. And but as far as this international stuff, you know, all these Christians trying to get money to help somebody in some other foreign country and all that stuff, even the tsunami relief and all that stuff, how do you know it gets there? You don't know. Often what happens is the money does get there, but the Muhammad dictators confiscate all the goods and then sell it to the poor. And so America, as far as being benevolent, or benevolent, there we go, that's a word, one of them words, helping out other people, the United Nations don't help them out. That tsunami relief, America was right there at the tippy top, you know, first off doing something, but the United Nations didn't do anything. And that's because America is still reaping the fruits of Christianity, even as rotten it is today. Okay, and so, considering the poor, let the Lord guide you in those things. If somebody puts you on a guilt trip, keep your money. Just be led of the Lord and do it secretly or locally or privately, and the Lord will bless. Okay, verse 14. A gift in secret pacifieth anger, and a reward in the bosom strong wrath. Okay, a gift in secret, giving a gift to somebody who's mad at you, letting them know that you're getting the gift, that's fine. Doing the opposite. What they expect. Does that mean it's a guarantee to pacify anger? No, you got idiots around. No matter what you're going to do to some people, you ain't going to please them. 15, it is joy to the just to do judgment, but destruction shall be to the workers of iniquity. Workers of iniquity have the letter N right there by it. And that goes back to Job 31:3 and Job 34:8. And there is an extensive footnote describing the workers of iniquity. And that phrase is found 20, 21 times in the Bible. Okay, 31:3 is where the extensive footnote is, because that's the first occurrence of the words or the phrase workers of iniquity. And those people seem to be a prophetic reference to the people who helped the Antichrist. You know, the rats, the snitches, the peacekeeping troops and things like that, that do the bidding of the Antichrist. Because you see, the Antichrist can be only in one place at one time, so he has to have informants everywhere. And that's who the workers of iniquity are. Okay, and then it has quite an extensive footnote about them. And one of their main activities, workers of iniquity, will be in the judicial system, the world court, the United Nations. Already there, yep. Yeah. Okay, so 21:15, it is joy to the just to do judgment. But yet people say, well, Christians are to forgive and forget. No, we're to execute justice and judgment. Now, thus far in our country, you know, the laws are on our side, but the problem is that the judges don't play by the rules. You know, if the judges would play by the rules of court, just the rules of court, it would be very easy to do, get stuff done in court. But they cheat, they ignore the rules, they don't care about the rules, they don't care about their oath, and they just... they got a built-in system where if they think that you're going to take it further, they can just reverse their, you know, and vacate their judgments and just seem to be getting off scot-free. Well, the Lord's keeping track of all this stuff. And it is joy to the just to do judgment. Some say at the white throne judgment, you know, that people are going to be crying like crazy when you see people thrown into hell. I don't know about that. Revelation chapter 19, when Babylon the whore is destroyed, they're singing in heaven. I'm not going to cry when he throws a devil into hell. I'm not going to cry when he throws a pope into hell, where he belongs. You know, a lot of times people say, well, you're supposed to feel sad at the death of the wicked. No, to be quite honest with you, I'm glad they're gone. You know, I know the Lord doesn't take pleasure in the death of the wicked. I understand that. But if you and I cried about everybody that we hear about dying, man, you'd be crying all day long. It's good to get rid of more wicked on this earth. More righteous living around. I like it that way. Okay, it is joy to the just to do judgment. And Isaiah 61 verse 8, it says, I, the Lord, love judgment. Micah 6, 8, there are three things the Lord requires of us. What is our duty? It's the first thing is to do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with thy God. That's the three. And one characteristic that God recorded about Abraham in Genesis chapter 18, that he was a man that executed judgment and justice. Genesis 18 about Abraham. You see, too many people like to sweep things under the rug. You know, the fundamental Baptist for years, when somebody gets caught, you know, in a fornicating or in a wicked situation, the leadership usually, you know, shuns the girl and kicks her out of the church or whatnot, and then they just move this guy here and here and this guy here, and they never bring down the judgment on them. And that's why they do what they do, as wicked as they are, because Ecclesiastes 8 verse 11, it says, when sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the hearts of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. I would dare say that if a judge or some probation officer or whatnot releases, you know, a murderer from jail when they're supposed to get the death sentence, and if he kills again, then he ought to take the judge out. He's responsible. Okay, so let's see. That's 15, 16. The man that wandereth out of the way of understanding shall remain in the congregation of the dead. That's a tough one, isn't it? If you don't apply your doctrine correct. You know, many of us would have to admit there are times that we've wandered away from understanding. Okay, so doctrinally, this one, if this don't fit in Paul's writings, then you're going to have to find out where it would fit in. The man that wandereth out of the way of understanding. Not out of the way of wisdom, not out of the way of knowledge, but understanding shall remain in the congregation of the dead. I would dare say you jump this into Hebrews chapter 6. Man takes the mark of the beast. He's done. That's the only way you can apply that doctrinally, I would dare say. If you try to apply that spiritually, boy, it's gonna, I mean, as far as doctrine for the New Testament, it's really going to get you all confused. Okay, 17. He that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. Well, sure don't look like it now, does it? Hugh Hefner? I would dare say he loves pleasure. I don't think he's real poor. Poor man in God's eyes. He that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. The idea is that pleasure is very costly. And of course, in the computer age, you know, children are so, their exercise prone is about like this, you know, just keep putting buttons and all that stuff, and they can push a button real good. And teenagers that have to be entertained through expensive things, they're going to have a very sad life. Children need to learn to enjoy going through the woods and playing guns with sticks and throwing rocks at each other. Simple life, the simple ways of living. And they're much more grateful when they do get something. Okay, so the idea there that pleasure is expensive. He that loveth wine and oil shall not be rich. The high life. Okay, it's the highbrow people. 18, the wicked shall be a ransom for the righteous, and the transgressor for the upright. The ransom there, I would dare say you'd have to probably take that to the judgment. The only way I could figure that one out. 19 is verily similar to verse 9. This is the one that Bill Clinton believes. It is better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. You know, any of the husbands that married Liz Taylor understands that. Okay, so that's pretty self-explanatory. 20, there is treasure to be desired in oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man spendeth it up. Now, I don't have a cross-reference on oil, but I would dare say probably a good cross-reference would be Matthew 25, 1 through 13, about the 10 virgins. And 5 are wise, 5 are foolish. So that'd probably be a good one to throw in on that one to help explain that. A foolish man spendeth it up. He's not saving for a rainy day. He's not setting money aside when he needs to. 21 is another tough one. He that followeth after righteousness and mercy findeth life, righteousness, and honor. Well, how do we follow after righteousness? The righteousness that we have is the righteousness of Jesus Christ. Now, this one I have a cross-reference going to Romans 2, and it appears that as far as the Scriptures goes, when a Jew... Okay, if a Jewish individual right now in Israel is of their conscience trying to obey the law, which you might have a few... Okay, in this age, when a Jew tries to obey the law and realize they can't, which they can't, then the Lord sends a soul winner by and shows him about Jesus Christ, because the law is a schoolmaster that teaches about Jesus Christ. Okay, but then when a Gentile follows their conscience, Romans 2 teaches, that when a Gentile tries to follow their conscience the best they can, no matter what church they grew up in, whether they're Catholic, whether they're Lutheran, Methodist, Pentecost, or whatnot, when they try to follow their conscience, okay, and if they're not saved, they're safe in a way, but they're not saved, they haven't trusted Christ, the Lord will allow a soul winner to come along and witness to them to tell them about Jesus Christ. The example of this is a fellow named Cornelius in Acts chapter 10. Cornelius was an Italian. He was a man that was fervent in his prayers, but he was lost. And the Lord sent Peter by to witness to him, to show him how to be saved, and Cornelius got saved. So the heathen that followed their conscience, God sent a missionary there. Well, what if the missionary doesn't obey? He'll find one to obey. He'll drop a track from a sky somehow. He'll send a track through a bottle through the ocean. There's a fella, first name's Tom, I can't remember his last name right now. He had studied the ocean currents down there by Florida or off in Gulf of Mexico, and he kind of figured that when he take a boat out there in the Gulf in that area, if he takes tracks and puts them in a bottle, that he figured out the currents, that it would go to Cuba. And he was doing that quite a lot. But it just didn't seem like he didn't know if they were getting them, and he wanted to do more, so he happened to rent an airplane, flew over Cuba, and then dumped tracks over where he could. And his plane went down in Cuba. So they arrested the guy, threw him in jail. And while he's in jail, one of the fellow prisoners said, "Look at this piece of paper I found in a bottle on the beach." Okay? And he was in jail for, I don't know, 6 months to a year, maybe a year and a half tops. And he got deported to America. Now, he is part of a magazine called... something about the martyrs. I forget what it's called. The Voice of the Martyrs. Yes, the Voice of the Martyrs. Now, they're not, you know, King James people as we are, but yet they've done some things for the Lord. And they had Richard Wurmbrand associated with them, who suffered for 17 years, I think. In communist prisons, 3 years in solitary confinement. Richard Wurmbrand. So he's experienced things that none of us have experienced. Okay, so yeah, that's the voice of the martyrs. Okay, 21. He that followeth after righteousness and mercy findeth life. That's what Romans 2 says. Righteousness and honor. A wise man scaleth the city of the mighty and casteth down the strength of the confidence thereof. The idea there is when you're trying to win somebody of a maybe a false system or whatnot, you look a little bit at what they believe and you can use their documents to prove them wrong or to prove their church wrong. Lambert, I think that guy, wrote a book, Catholicism Against Itself. It starts with an L. And he's used nothing but Catholic material, and he showed that Catholicism is hokey just from their material. Okay, and that's a good way to do it. Now, Paul did that where he quoted one of the Cretan prophets in Titus. He said, even one of your own said, the Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, slow bellies. Right. Right, right. And he had publishers was called Crescent Moon Publishers. Yeah. Yeah, so that's using wisdom. That's being wise as a serpent, harmless as a dove. 23, whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue keepeth his soul from troubles. That'd be a good verse where you have a right to be silent, right to remain silent. 24, proud and haughty scorner is his name who dealeth in proud wrath, doctrine that poke at the show to the Antichrist. The desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. And 26 probably goes with that. He coveteth greedily all the day long, but the righteous giveth and spareth not. He coveteth greedy all the day long. He's watching television. Television encourages people to covet. And the guy's lazy and he won't do any work. He refuses to labor. Now, if he refuses to labor, at the word refuse, X goes to 2 Thessalonians 3:10, where if a man's not willing to work, neither should he eat. That verse, a paraphrase of that verse, is found in the Soviet Union's constitution. If a man's not willing to work, neither should he eat. I think it's Article 12. And those people aren't supposed to believe the Bible. Why would they have a Bible verse in there? But that's the verse they use. Of course, Karl Marx didn't work a day in his life. Okay, and he coveted greedily, and that's how they rose to the top. And of course, the Bolshevik Revolution was put out by apostate Jews. They were like the Bolsheviks. There were like 260 or 350 or something like over 300 of them were Jews. Apostate Jews. Apostate Jews would kill their own people just like that. They don't care. And the apostate Jews are the ones that charge the international banking. And old man Rothschild, when he get ready to kick the bucket, he had some rules for his children. And one of the rules was that they were not to marry outside second cousins. He wanted all interbreeding going on in there so they can keep that within the family. Real character, real fine feller, huh? Okay, 27. The sacrifice of the wicked should be respected by everybody with love. You know, this idea where you're supposed to respect everybody's belief, that's a bunch of crap. I don't respect a liar. And when Malachi 2, where verse 3, it talks about the Lord says, I'm going to spread dung in the faces of the priests because they attack the Word of God. And on my footnote, I wrote, what a way to talk about somebody's religion. Fancy cathedrals are nothing but fancy commodes. That's the way the Lord looks at it. Now, in the New Testament, he looks the same about it. Paul said in Philippians 3, verse 8, he said, I count all things but loss that I may gain Christ. And he said, the things that I have suffered are but dung. That's the word he uses. Dung about religious things. You know, Heidi and I went up to Porter, Indiana, had to drop her cello off, and there's a real fancy evangelical Lutheran church, and I drove by, I said, Heidi, look at that big commode. Man, what a big fancy commode. And that's the way the Lord looks at it. But boy, when you talk like that, you know, I don't do it much anymore on the radio, but I used to use sound effects in the radio. And boy, that just set this preacher across town, make him mad. And I would say, you know, I'm going to interview a New American Standard pastor, and then I'd have a donkey braying in the background. And I said, what should you do with that fake Bibles and NIVs? And then I have a toilet flush in the back, you know, that toilet flush sound. You know, and boy, that just made them get them all upset. And I said, let's interview an evolutionary president, and I have a monkey going off, you know, just going nuts. And when you get the sound effects of those things, you know, that's how the Bible views it. In 1 Kings 18, Elijah made fun of those guys in their church service. Can you imagine going to the mass and just, there's one hillbilly guy down in Rensselaer, he went to some Catholic funeral, and he told me, he said, man, the next time I'm going to a Catholic funeral, I'm going to put a spring in my britches so I can get up, down. Well, I think it would be kind of fun, you know, if you'd go to one of them. I wouldn't do it at a funeral, but, you know, maybe at a wedding. But stand up when everybody else is sitting down, sit down when everybody else is standing up. I can't seem to get this right, you know. You know, and everybody's going tic-tac-toe three in a row, you know. And if you go like this and get over and you say, sorry, priest, I stutter, you know. And, I mean, just all sorts of fun stuff. Jen and I went to a wedding up in Chicago. It was a Catholic church. See, it's about 2,000. There's only 100 in there. And, of course, when you got something like that, you know, it's empty. Luke was a baby. And so I was getting, Catholic weddings are a real drag. So I knew we was going to the Catholic church, and I had about 40 tracks with me. So I, you know, pinched Luke or something. He started crying, you know. So I had to walk around the church. I was stashing tracks all over that church. Threw some paper in the holy water. You know, you walk in and they got the little holy water. I threw some paper in there. I thought it was a garbage can. I just wanted to see what people do if they see that. And they'd come in and dip in it. Most of them would need to dip in it. They didn't think anything of it. And then a couple of them looking in just go, oh. Yeah, that's a good thing for it. But they never pulled it out. They never pulled it out. They just looked at it. Oh. Yeah, man, something. Yeah. Make it blood. All sorts of fun stuff. The Lord says the sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination. That's what he says. Now, I don't say you ought to purposely, you know, do it to somebody if they don't have a sense of humor, but at times you could do that. How much more when he bringeth it with a wicked mind? Verse 28, a false witness shall perish, but the man that heareth speaketh constantly. Well, let's park on that one for a little bit. It's a comparison between a false witness and a faithful witness. But in the Bible, who is known for talking all the time? Ecclesiastes 5, verse 3, a fool is known by a multitude of words. Proverbs 17:27, it says, a man of knowledge spareth his words. So where do we draw the line on this? Where's the balance? Where this one says, the man that heareth speaketh constantly. Heareth what? And that would be, the answer is right, truth, when he hears the truth. Now, down a footnote, I've cut quite an extensive footnote on that, helping with that. Proverbs 10:21, the lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for want of wisdom. Okay, so the man who knows the truth just has to tell somebody about it. When it's just so clear, it's so obvious, you just can't hold yourself back. You got to tell somebody. Okay, down in a footnote, this proverb contrasts a false witness and a faithful witness. A faithful witness who hears from God feeds many. But the world views this constant reference to the truth as foolishness. I always want to tell someone about the truth, they think, get out of here. I don't want to hear it. When a man clearly hears from God, he desires to tell people. Now, Psalm 71 is the longest one, and this is the psalm about David. And when you know the truth and you get it from God, that gives you an excitement that here you have a God in heaven, an eternal God who took His time, I guess if you say, and told you one of 6 billion the truth, and that thing just came as clear to you, you want to tell somebody else. Psalm 71:15. David wrote, "My mouth shall show forth thy righteousness and thy salvation all the day," talking constantly, "for I know not the numbers thereof. I will go in the strength of the Lord God. I will make mention of thy righteousness, even of thine only. O God, thou hast taught me from my youth." He's learning from God. "And hitherto have I declared thy wondrous works. Now also when I am old and gray-headed, O God, forsake me not until I have showed thy strength unto this generation and thy power to everyone that is to come. Thy righteousness also, O God, is very high, who hath done great things, O God, who is like unto thee. Thou, which hast showed me great and sore trouble, shall quicken me again and shall bring me up again from the depths of the earth. Thou shalt increase my greatness and comfort me on every side. I will also praise thee with the psaltery, even thy truth, O my God. Unto thee will I sing with the harp, O thou Holy One of Israel. My lips shall greatly rejoice when I sing unto thee, and my soul which thou hast redeemed. My tongue also shall talk of thy righteousness all the day long. For they are confounded, for they are brought into shame that seek my hurt." This is a man that hears from God. Okay, that other reference down there in footnote, Jeremiah 30 verse or 20 verse 9, that's where Jeremiah said, "Okay, I quit." And then he says, "But the word of God was in my heart and it was a burning fire," and he had to speak up for God. Amos 3 verse 8, I think, is another one. Amos 3 verse 8. "The lion hath roared, who will not fear? The Lord God hath spoken, who can but prophesy?" When I get something out of this book and that thing just becomes so clear, I'm excited to tell people about it. And, you know, being an introvert, you know, I'm not much of a talker. When I get around people that I don't know, I just clam up and sit in a corner. I usually like to take my wife a lot of places because she can kind of keep things smoothly going. With me, the conversation is, "How you doing today?" "Fine." You know, 10 minutes later, "Well, what you been doing?" "Nothing." When Milt and I ride in the same car together, about 30 minutes, we might say 3 words back and forth, something like that. And so you always like having Jen around because she keeps things moving smooth, and it's not wasted talk. Okay, it's not vain talk. Okay, now down to the last statement down in a footnote. There are no permanent silent witnesses of God in the Bible. Now the thing is that we got to be wise as a serpent. What do you do when people don't want to hear it? Well, preaching on the streets, one thing. If they don't want to hear it, tough apples. Go someplace else. But as far as personally dealing with people, you know, if I've tried to work on a heretic a couple times, after 2 times, that's all my responsibility. Why show them anything else? If they rejected what you took the first time, And the second time, forget it. Don't waste your breath on them. Let God work on them. 1 Corinthians 14:38. Him that's ignorant, let him be ignorant. If they want to stay dumb, let them stay dumb. You know, why waste your breath on them? Don't cast a pearl before a swine. But, you know, as far as speaking the words of God, you're going to want to say something. You want to talk up when you hear from God. And it's a great joy to hear from God. And Acts 1:8 and Acts 4:31 talks about the boldness of a person, and that's when you get filled with the Spirit. Okay, so there's a balance in there. There's a balance, you know, for like, I'll talk about my brother right now. When I was at Hiles Anderson, I was so fired up about some things that I learned there, and I was trying to tell my brother, he said, get out of my face. He didn't want to hear it. And looking back on it, he had more wisdom than I did about that stuff. You know, he knew some of the fake stuff going on up there. And so, you know, after trying to tell him and seeing his reaction to a few things, I just said, okay, I'll just keep my mouth shut and be a good brother to you. Be the best I can to you. Be the best little brother I can to you. And just live my life the best I can in front of them. I dare say that was the best route I could have went. I mean, you can talk to yourself, you're blue in your face. And there's times you just gotta just shut up. Going out to the Pennsylvania, I knew Janet's parents thought I was a little nuts. You know, and of course, I thought I was nuts too myself, but and I just figured all these years going out to PA, I just kept my mouth shut. I'd go to that apostate church the first 4 or 5, 6 years and just sit there, you know, just sit there and grumble, you know, by myself. And I just said, I'm going to live the best I can and raise my children up, and my children do the preaching. And when a question's brought up, I'll answer it. And about 10 years ago, it was probably 10, maybe 12, Roy, Janet's brother, asked me a couple Bible questions, and I just said, what are you asking me these questions for? He said, I want to know the truth. I said, are you serious? Yep. I said, okay. And I could see here it's coming. So I answered his questions, and he got fired up, and he's been fired up ever since. And then he got Danny fired up, my cousin, Janet's cousin. Danny went down to PBI and graduated. He's now street preaching quite regularly down in Pennsylvania. His wife did a real nice thing to him, served him divorce papers about 3 months before his graduation. Another couple cousins, they were starting getting fired up about things of the Lord. Since then, those two fell away. But I just, you know, as far as family goes, a lot of times you gotta realize that I came to the realization that the only way my brother's gonna look at me is I'm always his little brother. Always him. And that's the role he views me as. My dad, he views me as his boy. And after 6 months of pastoring here, I pulled Ronnie aside and I just said, hey, Ron, I'm still your kid brother. Ain't nothing changed. And I believe that's the right thing to do it. Because that's the way they view you. Now, it's a rare person can view you in more than one role. Okay? You gotta train your mind in these things. Okay, when my dad's sitting here listening to me preach, he can't be looking at me, that's my son. He has to be looking at me, that's my preacher. That's the role. But when I'm at the house, I don't want my family calling me pastor. You know, they all call me Dave. And that's the way it's supposed to be. When we have family reunion and all that stuff, I'd rather have dad pray because he's the leader. And so you just keep that family relationship intact by being the best you can in the role that they look at you at. Now, if with time a person can learn to develop different roles, An example, I did take piano lessons from my wife. I was a very bad student. Fortunately, I wasn't her worst student. Milton Kaye gets that honor. I was the third worst. But when I was taking piano lessons, it's very hard. I had to look at her as my piano teacher. Well, tell me what to do, woman. And that's hard to do. But you have to look at it that way. Okay? Because that's the role that they're in. And you see, a lot of times when somebody's on a job and they've been a boss all day long and they come home from work, they think that's how they're going to work their family. It's a different role. And you have to conduct yourself according to the role that you're in, the role that they're looking at. And I'm not saying we shouldn't speak up. There's times we should speak up, and the Lord will open the doors. And street preaching and public preaching is a different thing than doing personal work with people. And so the thing is especially with family, because they've seen us during good and bad times. And the best thing we can do is, sure, we speak up here and here because we're excited about something, but then we just keep our mouth shut most of the time, a lot of times. Wise as a serpent, harmless as doves. And ask the Lord to open up the doors to speak. And that way you know the Lord is opening those doors when you're dealing with family members. But that doesn't mean everybody's going to love you for it. Man, through the years, I have been blamed for divorces. I have been blamed for suicides. There's a guy that committed suicide over in Francisville, and I got blamed for it. You know, I didn't hear about that about 2 years later after he committed suicide. And I heard through the grapevine that this guy got messed with a Baptist preacher over Rensselaer, and he went nuts, killed himself. Well, I was the Baptist preacher he got talking to. And looking back on it, I can see exactly what the devil did. Is we were making an inroad into an apostate church and trying to get some folks getting their heads woke up. And he was going to be the guy the Lord was going to use. And the devil saw that and he said, I got to take this guy out. And he did. And it shut that door, and that door has been shut ever since. Okay, so Proverbs 21:28, a false witness shall perish. Many hens are going to perish. But the man that heareth speaketh constantly. Okay, a wicked man hardeneth his face. Hardeneth his face, his neck, his heart. But as for the upright, he directeth his way. Okay, the wicked man is a fellow that says, don't confuse me with the facts, I got my mind made up. Stiff-necked, hard-hearted. You'll see it in their face. No matter what you say to them. Now, if the Lord gives you that kind of work, He gives you that kind of work. That's what He gave Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 2 and 3, He said, Ezekiel, I'm going to send you to some hard-headed people, a bunch of Jews. And He said, they're not going to listen to you. And you know, if I'd had a commission like that, I would say, okay, if they're not going to listen, why waste my time? But it helped Ezekiel. And he wrote 48 chapters in this Bible. And his wife died of a stroke in chapter 24 of his book. And the only reason the Lord had them there is so that they could say, well, at least they know there's a prophet in town. Ezekiel probably, at times Ezekiel said, boy, I sure would like to find a deserted island and just enjoy myself. I told Jeremy about this one guy. He got stranded on a deserted island. He's been there about 30 years, and finally a ship shows up. And people get off the ship and they see three huge buildings. And they ask him, man, what is that real nice fancy building in the middle? And he said, well, that's my house. He said, well, what's that building over there? He said, that's the church I go to. He said, well, what's that one over there? He said, that's the church I left because I got mad at him. I went over to this church. Had to be a Baptist. Okay, 21:30. There is no wisdom, no understanding, nor counsel against the Lord. Self-explanatory. 31. The horse is prepared against the day of battle, but safety is of the Lord. Now you can see faith and work sitting in there. You're to prepare. You're to do all you can to prepare. But God is the one that's going to lead. Safety is from the Lord. If you trust in the horse for the battle, forget it. Horse will die. Gun a jam. You know. The horse is prepared against the day of battle, you know, but safety is of the Lord. You got to trust the Lord in these things. Pray. And you know, when David no doubt practiced with that sling. He no doubt had been practicing on birds and, you know, raccoons and everything when he's out there watching sheep. He practiced killing. He killed a bear, killed a lion. And when he prayed and set that rock through that thing, he said, "Lord, make it hit that buffalo right in the forehead, the hardest part on his body." And man, that thing hit that guy right in the hardest part of his head, sunk right in, like somebody take a golf ball and, you know, hit that thing and hit him in the head and knocked him out, killed him. David said, "The battle's the Lord's." So he practiced, but yet he prayed too. Okay, like somebody, let's see, somebody said, how do they say, prepare like everything depends on you and pray like everything depends on God. And that's a good way to put it. We'll stop there. Well, there. Early 1900s. Yeah, Clarence Larkin, boy, that guy was, you know, if you read Ruckman's material and then you read Clarence Larkin, you realize that, man, at least a fourth of Ruckman's material he got from Larkin. Larkin was the brain as far as God showing him stuff. Okay, anything else?